Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. I'm your host for this week, Dr. Kevin Passero. My co-host, Dana Lake, will return next week. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., so please make sure to tune in every week. Also, I just want to let everyone know that you can always listen to archived or previous radio shows by going to www.myvillagegreen.com, and you can download for free any of the past shows that we've done over the last year and a half. Our show is sponsored by The Village Green, which is a health and wellness pharmacy located here in Bethesda, Maryland. They've been in business for over 40 years, supplying people in the area and all around the country with advice on health and wellness. We have a regular pharmacy if you need any regular prescriptions filled. We also have a compounding pharmacy, which does custom nutritional and prescription compounding, as well as bioidentical hormones. And of course, we have our retail section of all of our natural products, over 10,000 different natural products to come and select from. We have a wonderful array of nutritional experts, herbalists. I am the naturopathic doctor that is there once a week, all supplying you with great advice and guidance in your health and wellness needs. So today we have a really great show lined up. I'm going to get right to the topic this week. We're talking about natural approaches to common pediatric concerns. So pediatrics is a very wonderful field to work in. There's a lot of things that can be done with pediatrics in the natural world that many people don't know about. Most parents are usually dealing with their pediatric concerns going to their pediatrician, and there's a lot of wonderful things that pediatrics does for kids, but there's some big issues that are coming up in pediatrics that we're starting to see. For example, we are starting to see this thing called antibiotic resistance. And antibiotic resistance, we know, is occurring because people get prescriptions for antibiotics sometimes more quickly than they should. So we know that kids oftentimes get ear infections and get common illnesses, and many times those illnesses are best treated with antibiotics. But what we do know by looking at a lot of research is that a lot of times, if you held off giving antibiotics for a few days, you would see the resolution of the condition with letting the body do it itself. And as we're moving into a period of time where antibiotic resistance is becoming more of an issue, it's important to really consider what kind of things can we do to support a child naturally in achieving the resolution of whatever the illness is that they're dealing with. There's also other illnesses like asthma and allergies and so many other common concerns in pediatrics that can be helped or treatment can be augmented by using natural approaches. So today we're going to be talking about a wide range of things, starting with health of the pregnant mom, starting with developmental issues and developmental health. So we're talking about reducing, using supplements and using the right types of nutritional things to reduce issues with common childhood concerns like ADD and ADHD. A lot of these things that many, many parents are worried about and dealing with their kids. So my special guest today is Dr. Carrie Marshall. And Dr. Carrie Marshall is a licensed naturopathic doctor who specializes in pediatrics, women's medicine, and chronic disease management. Dr. Marshall has published several scientific papers, magazine articles, has written a book on proteins and amino acids, appears regularly on nationally syndicated radio shows, and has appeared on ABC's A View from the Bay, PBS's Healing Quest, and NPR. Dr. Marshall has served as a scientific advisor to Citizens for Health, a clinical advisor to Nordic Naturals, a nutrition advisor to the United States Sugar Association, and as a nutrition expert in her local public school district. Dr. Marshall is currently the medical director for Gaia Herbs, the leader in organic herbal products. She received her naturopathic medical degree from the National College of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon, her master's in epidemiology from Sunny at Buffalo, and her BS from George Washington University. She maintains a small private practice here in Bethesda, Maryland. So Dr. Marshall, thank you so much for being a guest on my show today.
Thank you for having me.
And so we're talking today about pediatric issues, and I know you do so much great stuff with women's health and pediatrics, and I wanted to start off the show by talking about what moms should be thinking about in pregnancy, because really the health of a child does begin in pregnancy. We know when moms are, you know, with mothers are drinking or smoking or doing other detrimental behavior during gestation, that we can see lifelong permanent disabilities with children. So we're going to look at the other side of it. What can you be doing constructively to ensure that your baby and your child is going to develop properly once they're born?
Well, you know, we always look at pregnancy as the three trimesters. And the first trimester, if you're not planning on getting pregnant, oftentimes you're almost all the way through the first trimester by the time
you realize
you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that is the time where you can do the most damage to a baby, which you know, that being said, you know, we should be living a healthy life in general on a day-to-day basis and acknowledging and honoring our own selves so that if by chance, you know, we're in a relationship that could potentially lead to pregnancy, that that's something we should always be thinking of. So, of course, if your intention is to get pregnant, you know, that great awareness going into, I want to raise and grow a healthy baby, you need to go into pregnancy with the same attitude of the things we're going to be talking about right now. Because during that first trimester, every major organ system is virtually starting from a single cell. And so any point along that way from one single cell to the development of the heart or the development of the eyes or the development of the digestive system, anything can go wrong. I mean, it's amazing when you study embryology how many different steps there are. And all of those steps rely upon our own maternal nutrition and what's going on in the health in our own body. And so it's a critical time to really examine how much protein we should be getting, the quality of the fat we should be eating, as well as the vitamins and minerals, preferably from whole foods, fruits and vegetables, lean animal proteins, whole grains. Those are the places that we want to get our vitamins and minerals. But of course, we know that there's certain demands on a pregnant woman's body where certain nutrients, such as folic acid, we need to make sure we're getting more of to really optimize the development of the nervous system. So a prenatal vitamin, I mean, if you're thinking of getting pregnant, it's best to get on the prenatal vitamin before you try to get pregnant so that you have those nutrients in your body and you're not waiting till you're 7 or 8 weeks pregnant.
Right. At least 3 months before, if you're planning a pregnancy, you should definitely be getting on a prenatal. And a prenatal, most prenatals are going to contain high amounts of folic acid. That's one of the main nutrients that people have been concerned about because we know of its connection with neural tube defects. And it's a total preventable condition if you have enough folic acid. But there's some other nutrients that are really important that mothers should be taking prenatally that, you know, we're starting to see more information about finally, right? But for a long time, it has not been included in regular prenatals. And this is, of course, I'm alluding to the omega-3 fatty acids.
Correct. And actually, the American Pregnancy Association, which they have a great website for anyone, again, who's thinking of getting pregnant, is pregnant, having trouble with infertility. So the American Pregnancy Association has a great website that gives all kinds of resources about who to find locally, what to eat.
Do you know what the website is?
You know, I don't know. But if you Google American Pregnancy Association, you'll find it. They actually just endorsed Nordic Naturals fish oil products as being the highest quality fish oil supplements. They do have a prenatal DHA supplement because we know that international health organizations have come to the round table, you know, year after year, and they have conclusively determined that a pregnant woman needs a minimum of 300 milligrams a day of DHA.
Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. I don't want to cut you off, but I like that the fact that you mentioned specifically the Nordic Naturals and the fish oil, because a lot of pregnant moms are concerned about taking fish oil because they've been told that the fish oil contains contaminants, and they take the other DHA-type supplements that are not derived from fish. And, you know, I'm always trying to explain to people that if the fish oil is extracted properly, that's not the issue.
Well, let's take a step back. Fish contains contaminants. So it's important to understand that the FDA, the EPA, you know, all pregnancy associations, they have a guideline for pregnant women. You cannot eat more than 12 ounces of fish during the course of a week. So that's a pretty small amount when you're trying to consider, because let's think of it in this perspective. If you make a fist with your hand, that's roughly about 3 or 4 ounces of fish. And that's going to give you about 1 gram or 1,000 milligrams of EPA and DHA, not just DHA, but EPA, which is the precursor to DHA.
Assuming that's a high essential fatty acid containing fish.
Exactly. Right. So a farm-raised fish like farm-raised salmon or tilapia will absolutely have nowhere near that.
Right.
I'm actually more specifically talking about wild salmon. Which is a high essential fatty acid containing fish. So, and again, you know, we should talk about fish, which fish are good for you, which aren't. Stay away from farm-raised fish. There's going to be more contaminants, less good for you fat. You know, things like wild salmon. Most fish that are wild caught are going to have higher bioavailability of the healthy fats. But you do want to stay away from things like swordfish, tilefish, shark.
Very large feeder fish, tuna,
large tuna fish, not the tuna fish that comes in a can. Those are typically medium-sized tuna. So, you know, those fish are safe to eat in moderation during the course of your pregnancy. But that being said, you can't get all you need from fish based on, unless, you know, you're really regimentedly eating,
right,
you know, 12 ounces
mm-hmm.
a week of wild salmon, which is possible to do. So it's important to understand during the food chain that fish eat algae, fish eat other things that grow. Algae also contains heavy metals and
mm-hmm.
contaminants. So just like fish oil supplements, algae-based DHA supplements also have to go through a similar kind of decontamination process. And so what Nordic Naturals does is they have one of the highest levels of elimination of heavy metals and dioxins and PCBs, where the EPA says, okay, you have to remove these things to, say, parts per million.
Right.
Nordic Naturals, in many cases, does it to
parts per trillion.
Actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess my point is that taking fish oil for a pregnant woman is safe if you're getting it from a company that's doing a good job.
Company.
So don't be scared of fish oil. It is okay. And at least now, finally, a lot of prescription prenatals do contain some DHA and EPA, but it's not always from necessarily the fish source, from what I understand.
And also, too, I mean, you can get DHA from organic free-range eggs because those chickens
right.
eat bugs
mm-hmm.
and their omega-3 content will also be higher. And because there's increased demand of protein on the body, which is probably something else we should talk about, you know, eating an egg or two a day for a pregnant woman
right.
of
one of
these
free-range
organic eggs.
Okay, so, you know, when we come back from the break, we're going to be continuing talking about a few nutrients that pregnant moms definitely need to be considering. We're going to be talking about first foods for your baby, first supplements for your baby. We're going to be talking about recipes, and we're going to be talking about things you can do at home to reduce rates of common pediatric illnesses. So don't go anywhere. I am Dr. Kevin Passero, and this is the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. We will be back in just a minute. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. I am Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. My wonderful co-host Dana Lake will return next week with an exciting show. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., so don't forget to tune in. If you just started listening to the show and want to hear the beginning part of it, you can always log on to www.myvillagegreen.com and listen to any archive shows, any shows that we've recorded over the last year and a half. Today we're talking about natural approaches to common pediatric concerns, and we started off the first segment by discussing some very important things, nutritional considerations that mom needs to be doing before she even gets pregnant and while she is pregnant to ensure the most healthy child she can possibly ensure. So I have with me today Dr. Carrie Marshall, who is a naturopathic doctor. She has many roles in the industry of health and wellness and the natural product industry, and also has a small private practice here in Bethesda, Maryland. And she has specialized in pediatrics and women's health for a while. So Carrie, thanks for being with me today. And we just wanted to finish up for a few minutes what we were talking about in the first segment, just a couple other, we were talking about omega-3 fatty acids and why it's so important for pregnant women to take these. And we're starting to see even very common prescription prenatals starting to contain DHA and some omega-3s in them because the scientific community has finally fully endorsed the health benefits of omega-3, specifically DHA. And one of the main reasons why we're endorsing it is because it is so vital to the development of the brain and the eye of the developing child. There is a huge amount of the fat content of the brain and of the eye that's composed specifically of DHA, which you can only get from animal sources like fish. So this is why we've found it to be so incredibly important for the development of children. Carrie, do you have any additional comments about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you think of the human brain in general, our brains are 60% fat. So if someone calls you a fathead, that's a compliment. And of that 60%, we want the vast majority percentage of it to be DHA.
Mm-hmm.
And when a woman is pregnant or nursing, her DHA, her maternal DHA in her brain gets preferentially shuttled from her brain to the developing baby
right.
or through the breast milk.
Right.
And so it actually leaves a mom depleted.
Yep.
And so that's where, you know, we will commonly say, oh, I have pregnancy brain or breastfeeding
mm-hmm.
brain, because literally the best of what we have is being sucked out of our brains and given to our children.
Right.
I mean, that's the reality of motherhood. And so if you don't supplement it during pregnancy and lactation, then you're at higher risk for postpartum depression, as well as other mood disorders.
Yep. So even if you have adequate levels going into pregnancy, it's so important to continue supplementing with it so that you don't become deficient as a pregnant mom.
Right. And in addition to the brain and eyes, actually male genitalia is really important. So I'm sure that'll encourage dads to encourage their wives if they know they're pregnant with boys. Come on, honey, you got to support our son here. So the male genitalia tissue is actually primarily composed of DHA as well.
Okay. So let's talk about some other nutrients that are important for mom to consider. Calcium is obviously a big one that a lot of moms don't think of, and this becomes particularly important when fetal bone development is really in its height, which is usually in the third trimester.
Correct. Yep. The two primary things that are developing at alarming rates in the last trimester are the skeleton of the body, which is primarily calcium is the most abundant mineral in our bodies. And in the last, you know, month or 6 weeks of pregnancy, the baby's growing at a half a pound per week. And that has a lot to do with the physical growth. I mean, they're just, you know, rapidly growing. So calcium's enormously important. And, you know, the nervous system is the other system that's developing at that rate. So, you know, calcium, the only other time that we need to really increase our levels between 1,300 and 1,500 milligrams of calcium daily is during menopause or with osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, just that last trimester where, you know, women may not need to supplement it the whole pregnancy, but really focus on it. The last few months.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about, probiotics. So definitely a huge concern. We're going to talk about probiotics being one of the most important supplements for your baby, but even when you're pregnant, pregnant moms should think about taking probiotics as well.
You know, probiotics is something that everyone should think about taking on a regular basis because, well, especially, you know, with this new swine flu fears and everything else, I mean, we're constantly being subjected to all kinds of bacteria and virus and molds and yeast and you name it. And if we can keep, you know, positive bacteria in our own system, then that will help keep our body in balance. And certainly, you know, when we are, you know, birthing a baby and then, you know, if and when we choose to breastfeed, I mean, we need to have a continual flow of healthy bacteria so that that new baby can also establish a healthy digestive system and immunity as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. When that baby is born, its gastrointestinal system is sterile. So
it's virtually naked.
Yep. The main way that your bacterial flora starts in a baby is when they're coming down the birth canal. The probiotics, the same bacteria that inhabit your GI system, is what inhabits the vagina. So as the baby's coming down the birth canal, they get inoculated with those good bacteria. So it's very important for mom to have a lot of those good bacteria so that the baby's GI system can get started correctly. And we're going to talk about how important probiotics are for babies. And of course, it also increases the immunity of the mom, making her less apt to get sick while she is pregnant. So let's talk about feeding your baby. So great, we've gotten through a good pregnancy. We had a good birth. The baby is now out. And we're talking about, what are we going to feed this baby? What is it going to be on? Well, we know that breast milk is the best if possible, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, there's always situations where it can't happen. I mean, obviously, adoption being one of them, you know, in which case, if you can't breastfeed, I mean, there are a number of great hypoallergenic formulas on the market. I don't recommend, you know, going to a soy or a milk-based one. If you can find a whey-based formula, if you have to do formula, then I highly recommend that because a lot of the allergens of, you know, because whey comes from dairy, but a lot of the allergens are removed.
Right.
So that is a great option. But certainly breast milk is ideal. But then, you know, one of the big questions we always hear is, when do you introduce food, solid foods, to your baby? And, you know, some pediatricians recommend 4 or 5 months. But, you know, for one thing, I say if your child cannot sit up in a high chair, they should not be consuming foods. I mean, the earliest that I ever say for food introduction is 6 months. And even then, it's questionable. I mean, you shouldn't be in a hurry. I mean, it's not that if a baby's breastfed and they're eating well and they're chubby, they're not malnourished.
Right.
So if you wait till 7 or 8 months, or you try a few things in 6 months and they're just not jumping all over it, especially if it's a first child, the second child's going to be a lot more eager to eat because
they're
it's
watching
a monkey
the behavior.
See, monkey
yep.
do mm-hmm. type thing. But, you know, don't feel frustrated if at 6 months your child's just not grabbing on to things and wanting to just run with eating. It's not unusual. So, you know, I think that's important because I know there's so many frustrations that moms feel, and that's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, as the child's developing, moms are so excited for the children, and parents are to reach their next milestone, and eating foods is definitely one of them. So I think, you know, there's a large variation. I don't think there's, just like you said, there's definitely no rush. I want to talk a little bit about breastfeeding. I mean, breastfeeding, You know, I know when my wife was pregnant, it was, oh, you should definitely breastfeed, and all of the books and everything you read basically make it sound like that breastfeeding is the most natural, easy thing to happen in the world. Well, what we learned is that breastfeeding in some ways and some, when we were actually trying to implement this strategy, it seemed like the most unnatural thing in the world because it seemed virtually impossible to make it work. And eventually we did, but there are definitely some challenges. Women run into all sorts of problems with breastfeeding. You know, big ones are just pain, major discomfort with the baby latching on and with feeding. And that can be a huge deterrent to many, many, many moms, obviously, for very obvious reasons. So, you know, what we found is that we were able to find some natural strategies to help reduce the pain. And it had everything to do with how well is the baby latching onto the breast.
Yeah, you know, I always, I had a conversation with my sister just after I had my first, and it's like you can read every book on pregnancy, and they talk about all the things to do during pregnancy, all the ways to get ready for labor, but they forgot to tell you how much breastfeeding hurt in that first week or two. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was shocked. I was like, how come you didn't tell me this? You've been talking me through this whole thing, and you left that part out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's amazing. But, it, you know, if it's something, you know, there's obviously lactation consultants. La yep. Leche League is great.
Yep.
They will send people to your home. You know, they have some really great support groups. And
yep.
so, I mean, that's a great place to start. You know, obviously, if you're doing in the hospital, you know, hopefully your hospital will
most
have
of all of them
yep
have lactation consultants at the hospital
right,
that will come and spend time with you.
But just, you know, it is going to be painful. I mean, I just want everyone to know that up front. It's not easy. It is painful. It's, you know, there's a number of things that can happen, but if you can push through those first few weeks, it does get a lot easier.
Yep.
It's just getting over that major first hump.
And for women who are out there, you know, there are women who have it be painful for months and months on end. And what I'm trying to bring up is there are sometimes an issue with the baby, the way that the baby is latching on to the nipple. And, you know, there are some cranial sacral therapy is a way to help relieve certain stressors in the cranial bones that can help to allow for a better latch. And this is something that we found to be extremely helpful in our personal situation, where it was dramatic how much the behavior of the baby changed with its ability to latch on after some cranial sacral therapy. The ability of the baby to open its mouth properly and put the tongue out properly and latch onto the nipple, and it made a huge, huge impact on the reduction in pain that women can feel when the baby is latching on. So there are some other things out there that women can try to alleviate some of these problems with breastfeeding. Also, one of the major concerns is low milk production. This is specifically an issue for women who go back to work very quickly, because once they get back to work, they're not being able to breastfeed so regularly, and they're maybe having to use pumping or something that's not quite as efficient to keep their milk production up. So what are some other things that women can think about doing just to help keep breast milk production up?
Actually, there's a number of botanicals, some mm-hmm. herbs that are really helpful. And there's a couple different companies that have herbal teas. And one of the big things, too, is just water intake in general.
Exactly.
So, staying hydrated. And that's why I like herbal teas as a way to really help with milk production. There's a company, Walita, that makes mm-hmm. a great nursing tea that will help boost milk production. Gaia Herbs has a PhytoCap capsule that's called Lactate Support that will also help increase milk production. So you can just swallow a couple of those capsules a day. And
these contain safe herbs.
Safe yep. herbs for pregnancy and lactation, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a whole other thing. And actually, the American Pregnancy Association website does have a link on it. And that's one of the things I like about this website, which tells you what botanicals are safe to take during pregnancy and mm-hmm. lactation. So I found their website to be very useful and with great information.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, water intake. And then interestingly, we know in Ireland, you know, that drinking a Guinness. Guinness, and I'm telling lactating women to drink beer, but, you know, Guinness does have some great medicinal properties to it to actually help increase milk flow. I'm not talking about drinking a six pack, but,
right.
you know, certainly drinking one mm-hmm. Can be helpful for milk production.
Okay. So those are some good ideas. When we come back from this break, what we're going to be talking about is first foods, and we're actually going to be going over some specific recipes, and we're going to be talking about first supplements. So what things you might consider giving to your baby at a very early age to ensure optimal health as they grow and develop. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green on AM 1260. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Hello and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by The Village Green. And we are here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., covering a wide variety of topics on health and nutrition. Today, our topic is natural approaches to common pediatric concerns. In the first segment, we talked about what pregnant moms should be thinking about before they get pregnant and while they're pregnant as far as diet and nutritional supplements is concerned. And then we've been talking a little bit about breastfeeding. And now in this segment, we're going to talk about first foods and things that you should think about feeding your baby right when they are ready to start eating solid foods. So I have with me my special guest, Dr. Carrie Marshall, who is a naturopathic doctor. She has a small private practice here in Bethesda, Maryland. So thank you for being here, Carrie.
So, yes, Dr. Becerra, we are talking about foods and when to introduce
yep.
them. And,
mm-hmm.
and now, you know, we said roughly around 6-7 months. I have a very regimented program for food introduction that I do with my patients because we find more and more kids having common problems like allergies mm-hmm. and asthma
yep.
and
eczema
and ear infections.
Yep.
And so I don't wait to find out if a child has sensitivities mm-hmm. to foods or is a hyper-reactive
mm-hmm.
child. I would rather assume that they are because the majority of kids are these days. And so I stay away from some of the classic foods that are introduced first, like mashed banana and Cheerios and, you know, some of the more dairy-based foods. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that children should be eating more vegetables than fruit.
Right.
And if you don't introduce vegetables, which tend to be a little bit more bitter than fruits, then that child will never develop a palate for bitter foods. They will only develop that sweet palate, which is what, you know,
right, you
mashed
think about,
banana.
Right, the recommended first foods, Cheerios, which is a very sweet tasting
yeah,
food, even though it doesn't have a lot of sugar. Right,
very
has a very
quickly.
High glycemic index. Bananas and fruit, all high sugar. So parents wonder when they come in and I talk to them about changing their child's diet when the kid is 3 or 4 years old that they should eat more vegetables. And mom says all he likes to eat is, you know, bread and pasta and cheese and things like that. It's because they've never really developed that vegetable part of the palate.
Right. And so, you know, obviously, like you're saying, with a 3-year-old, that's a little harder. So if you have a newborn, you can really...
It's the only time you can actually control
what
they're going to eat.
Well, that's not true. You're still a parent all the time. But, you know, I recommend getting a baby food grinder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're $10.
Yep.
They travel well. You know, they're these little plastic things. They rinse really easily. And, you know, I always say, especially, you know, once they start eating, that whatever vegetable the family's eating is a vegetable that you throw in there, you steam it up or you pull it out of some soup and you put it through the grinder. You can add a pinch of salt and
mm-hmm.
a pinch of olive oil.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what a child should be eating for the first couple months. But, you know, those very, very first foods should be, and I know this sounds crazy, but it should be things like spinach and
mm-hmm.
Swiss chard and kale and
mm-hmm.
some of the leafy greens, because those are the bitter things and those are the things with the highest concentration of vitamins and minerals
yep.
that our children will like. And I've yet to find children who, given those first 2 or 3 foods and those greens, that they don't continue to eat those greens throughout their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even after those greens, you can think about things like green zucchini or
mm-hmm.
yellow squash,
yep.
which are a little bit sweeter.
Yep.
They're definitely sweeter than the bitter
greens. Peas are a little bit sweeter,
yep,
but
absolutely.
Kids
and
like
green
those.
Beans.
Yep.
So, you know, but if you start with the bitter greens and then work your way towards sweetness, then...
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start mixing a couple of the vegetables together. And I would say, you know, wait a good 2 or 3 months of doing vegetables before you introduce a fruit.
Yep. That's always definitely nice to do if you can. Sometimes, you know, the less sweeter fruits like blueberries or something like that can be introduced a little bit early. And then with grains, I mean, you know, some parents do like to introduce some grains. They do tend to hold kids over a little bit longer than sometimes the vegetables do. What kind of grains would you recommend parents introduce first if they're going to do grains?
I would definitely stay away from the gluten grains, so anything wheat related.
Mm-hmm.
And
why,
you know,
is that? Explain why that's important.
Well, gluten, especially today, with so much of it being, well, wheat specifically, so much of it is genetically modified, that more and more people, and this is probably a whole other show, more and more people are becoming sensitive to wheat, which means their bodies are reacting in a negative way to it. And wheat, I have found to be one of the 3 top foods that actually causes eczema in children, dairy and soy
mm-hmm.
being the other 2.
Yep.
So it's almost always one of those 3. And so, again, if we're going into this assuming that a child is going to react to something, you know, wheat, dairy, and soy are not foods right. that should be readily introduced in a child's diet. So, you know, if we're talking about what grains are good for a child, you know, brown rice, cereals, mm-hmm. and then, you know, oat. And I know there's some debate about if oat's a gluten grain. It's technically not a gluten grain, although it's often manufactured in right. the same facility. So I'm not so worried right. about that.
And you can find these substitutes. You can find rice-based little cereals that are just like a Cheerio
Absolutely.
Or just like a cracker, you know,
or
that aren't going to have
a little oat cracker right. that, you know, mm-hmm. these kids can have, and they'll have much less reactivity to
right.
it.
And when we say reactivity, I mean, we know there are concerns like eczema and stuff, but the whole point of the show is talking about, you know, avoiding common problems with pediatric issues. So one of the biggest things that parents deal with their kids is infections, right? Ear
right.
infections, upper respiratory infections. These are some of the major concerns, allergies, asthma. And, you know, what we know is that if we can reduce some of the reactivity, you know your kids are going to get sick. You know that a developing child's immune system, they're supposed to get sick a decent amount, right?
Right.
So what we're trying to establish is let's minimize the amount of illness that they're going to get, or let's allow them to recover from that illness as quickly as possible. Because we know, you and I know, so many parents that have kids who have ear infection after ear infection after ear infection, courses of antibiotics on end.
Well, the antibiotics don't work because really what's going on is there's just an inflammatory reaction within the ear where there's right. just so much fluid buildup.
Right.
And dairy is usually the number
right.
one culprit in that situation.
And antibiotics will calm it down. I mean, they work, but when the infection comes right back, we know that they're not addressing the root cause of it.
Except that 80% of childhood ear infections are viral in origin.
Right.
So the antibiotics don't always work
right.
because an antibiotic will not treat a virus.
Right.
I mean, that's a really critical thing to understand. And I think that's where pediatricians are finally coming on board because of all the problems we've been having with antibiotic resistance in the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say to a parent, give them a little Tylenol, because they know that will
right.
calm down the pain
yep.
and
yep.
just, you know, keep them hydrated
and allow them to get
right,
through the viral infection.
If a child doesn't have a high fever, it's most likely not a bacterial infection
mm-hmm.
and the antibiotic won't work.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a really, really interesting point. So what else should we talk about with first foods?
You know, I can't say enough about just trying, without being a control freak about it, just really trying to control what the first foods are
mm-hmm.
and really just understanding that if you can really work diligently and work hard at it for, you know, 3 to 4 months of introducing the right foods at the right time, you can really guarantee that your child will likely be a pretty healthy eater
mm-hmm.
for the remainder. I mean, there's nothing worse than, you know, and we had friends over yesterday for the holiday, and, you know, one kid, and I made organic hot dogs, and one kid, all she ate for dinner was half of a hot dog bun, not even the hot dog, and that was all she ate. And her mom's like, oh, she just doesn't eat, and she's 6. You know, she should be eating. There should be
mm-hmm.
something there that child can eat besides a hot dog bun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just, that breaks my heart when I see that, because it's like, you know, they
right.
were willing to let her have dessert.
Right.
Even though she didn't eat dinner.
And this leads right into, it has a lot to do with what you're doing as a parent. You know, if the foods that you're preparing for dinners are going to be healthy foods, it's more likely what your child is going to eat. You know, so it's not just about what you feed your kids, but about the examples that you set and the food that you're bringing into your house. Because that will have a huge impact. So if you're thinking about getting pregnant, or you have a young kid and you're trying to make them as healthy as possible, first you need to look at what you and your spouse or you are doing by yourself in regards to what you're doing at home with food. So, you know, and I think it's just important for people to realize they shouldn't be scared of giving their kids vegetables as the first food, because almost every book you read, regardless of what it's about, they always talk about grains as the first food. And I think parents are sometimes scared to start with vegetables for some reason or another. Specifically, I know, you know, people told us definitely don't start with broccoli or any of those things, which can be a little bit harder to digest. They do cause a little bit more gas, but we introduced broccoli pretty early and our child has done absolutely fine with that. So
I think as long as you steam it up, just so literally, if you could mash it with a fork,
right.
then their body, especially something like broccoli,
yep.
they'll be able to digest it
yep.
pretty easily.
So let's talk about, in this last couple minutes of the segment that we have, we're going to talk about first supplements to start a child on. And there are a few things that I think are really important. And the number one supplement that I think kids should be considered given at a pretty young age is probiotics.
Right.
And we talked about this earlier in the show.
And that carries over from what we were saying, you know, in the birth canal, they're exposed to a tremendous amount of bacteria. And if they have a C-section, they're not exposed to that bacteria, and they need to be. That's actually part of the normal birthing process. And when they come out of the womb in a sterile environment, like in a C-section, then all of a sudden they're just exposed to everything in the hospital. They're also at risk. So no matter if it's a vaginal or a C-section birth, there's still going to be issues of exposure. And, you know, one of the easiest ways is to get, you know, a powdered probiotic. And if the mom's lactating, she can actually just put it right on her nipple and the baby can nurse it off. The other way is if you lick your pinky finger and then dip it in the powder and then let the baby just nurse it right off your finger.
And for formula-fed babies, it dissolves super easy into formula.
Right into the formula.
Right. There's no taste, hardly any flavor, anything like that
right,
to it.
Right.
And then, so why are probiotics so important? I mean, usually before the show, I review the scientific literature for new research that's coming out in case I have any downtime, which I usually don't. I usually share that with you guys. And every single time I go through it these days, there's always something about probiotics specifically related to kids. And what it's always related to is reducing the amount of infections, whether it be ear infections or usually just upper respiratory infections in general, which are going to include the lungs, the nose, and the ears, reducing the incidence of those infections in kids that are given probiotics. So, you know, it's such a tremendously positive strategy in helping to keep your kids healthy.
Well, and when you have school-age children, I have a first and fourth grader. I mean, they are constantly exposed to things every day. And both their teachers say to me all the time, I can't believe your kids never miss school. They're never sick. And if I know there's a stomach flu going around school, I give my kids probiotics preventatively so that they have good bacteria in their stomach because they're inevitably going to be exposed. We
right.
all are. It's self-limiting, meaning depending on the state of our own immune system is how we will be affected. So I will douse my kids with things to help protect them, knowing that they are going to be exposed day after day.
And I think so many parents are freaked out about giving their kids bacteria when they're these little babies, right? But I think people need to understand that these bacteria are the beneficial bacteria. These bacteria aren't going to cause an infection. These bacteria are going to promote the health of your children. And if you truly look at the scientific literature, you'll see that even at day one of birth, it is completely safe to be giving children probiotics as a supplement.
Absolutely.
So when we come back from the break, we're going to finish up this discussion a little bit, and we're going to talk about some very specific home strategies you can use to deal with a sick child if your pediatrician is not going to give you antibiotics or if antibiotics are something that you don't choose to use for that illness. So when we come back, we're going to be discussing the rest of this. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero on AM 1260, and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute. And welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living. I am Dr. Kevin Passero, your host for the next hour. My wonderful co-host Dana Lake will return next week for a great show relating to health and wellness. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. and we're sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary located in Bethesda, Maryland on West Cedar Lane. Today we've been talking about natural approaches to common childhood illnesses and issues. We started off the show talking about nutritional supplementation during pregnancy. We've talked about first foods. We just got into first supplements that you might want to consider giving your child in the last segment. So we're going to finish off by talking about some great home remedies and home therapies you can think about for some common issues related to childhood problems and illnesses. I have with me as my special guest, Dr. Carrie Marshall, who is a naturopathic doctor. She has a small private practice here in Bethesda, Maryland, and I'm lucky enough to have her on the show today. So thanks for being with us, Dr. Marshall. So let's just recap the last segment. We were talking about probiotics. Dr. Marshall, do you have anything else to input on how important probiotics are for kids?
You know, I think we really covered it. I mean, I think it's just, I think it's an important supplement for all ages, but particularly babies.
Yep. And then also a couple other things. Fish oils are important to supplement with babies. Now, that can be difficult when they're really, really young, but most formulas, you want to make sure you get one that has some DHA in it. If it's a breastfeeding mom, she can definitely just make sure that she's taking adequate amounts of fish oil in supplementally, whether it be through a capsule or a cod liver oil or something like that, so that is a fat-soluble nutrient that will go right through to the breast milk, as well as vitamin D is another another very one important to consider, especially for breastfeeding moms. They say that breastfeeding babies are more likely to be deficient, not because vitamin D doesn't get through the breast milk, but because about 85% of most of our adult population is deficient in vitamin D. So every single woman, breastfeeding mom or pregnant mom, should be asking her doctor to run her vitamin D levels to make sure that her vitamin D stores are adequate, because if hers are, then the babies will be. And vitamin D is crucially important to enhancing the immune system, preventing the development of autoimmune disease, and you know, as we get older, reducing rates of cancer. But in children, it has a lot to do with supporting the immune system.
And we look at bone development.
Yeah, bone development. Obviously, I definitely can't overlook that one. But you know, with all these issues with influenza, we know there's a lot of issues with the body being susceptible to infection when vitamin D levels are low. So that is hugely important for all breastfeeding and pregnant moms out there to ask their doctors to run a vitamin D test on them. So let's talk about, you know, what to do. You have a 6-month-old, a 1-year-old, a 5-year-old, and you're dealing with, you know, the kid comes home sick. I mean, let's talk about what can parents do at home with their kids. This is one of the most wonderful things that naturopathic medicine has to offer. I mean, kids respond so well to natural therapies. It is just, you know, so few times that they actually need the type of pharmaceutical intervention that is used so often, because so many things can be controlled using natural therapies. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. And again, we could probably do a whole show just on this piece. So, yep. You know, to really summarize it, I mean, sleep is critical. And we're not talking about knocking your kids out with Benadryl so they sleep. There's plenty of botanicals that are really helpful. Lemon balm is one that's actually antiviral, and it will help calm the nervous system.
So are we talking about just kids that don't sleep well in general, or are we talking about when they're sick?
When they're sick.
Okay.
And it's the same when we're as adults. When
right.
we're sick, the most important thing to do is sleep.
Okay, so let's...
I mean, we need to get right. lots of rest when we're sick.
So let's talk about using an herb like lemon balm. Like, how old of a child would you use this in? How would you get it into them? I mean, you know, kids don't like to take medicine. What's the youngest age you could give a child some of these things?
Really about 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, once they're old enough to start getting foods, there are certain botanicals, and I'd really like to preface that, and it's important to know that not all botanicals are for children. And again,
absolutely,
the APA website does have a list of
which is the American Pregnancy Association website.
Yep. And there's definitely, you know, other herb companies have lists of herbs that are safe or mm-hmm. not safe. And certain herb companies, Gaia Herbs, the company I work for, they actually have a children's line. So they have immune products, they have products that will help, you know, calm a child down, mm-hmm. help a child sleep. So if you know, if you can find a company that does have a children's line of products, then, you know, those are clearly botanicals that are safe for children
right.
to take.
Okay, so let's talk about probably the most common childhood illness, ear infections, right? So number one, you have a child that is having some reoccurring ear infections. Ear infections are going to be, your child's going to get them at some point, right? Let's talk about reoccurring ear infections. The first thing that we're doing is we're looking at food allergies, right?
Absolutely.
So we're trying to base a diet that's, you know, has good amounts of low allergenic foods. The top food allergens are going to be wheat, right?
Dairy and soy.
And soy, and possibly corn. But wheat, dairy, and soy, for sure, the top three that parents need to be considering. Eggs are also up there. I've had many kids who, you know, have had eggs eliminated from their diet, and their ear infections are, you know, basically the recurrent ear infections go away. So first thing is, what is your child eating? You wanted them on good whole grain brown rice and vegetables and good quality fruits. And so that's one thing that parents can do. But let's say we're dealing with ear infections anyway. What's the course of action? I mean, what does a parent do? Where do they even start if their kid comes down with an ear infection and their thing that they've done always is just go to the pediatrician and usually get a prescription for antibiotics?
Well, if you remember what I said earlier, the majority of ear infections are viral in origin.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things to consider is that in an ear infection, whether it's virus, bacteria, whatever, there's a mucus buildup. And water is actually the number one mucolytic, meaning mucus breaking up agent that we have. So getting your kid to just drink lots and lots and lots of water. If they're a baby, put it in a bottle. You know, if it's a kid, just give them a cup of water and say, that's what you're drinking.
Right. Not now. Juice.
Not juice. Plain water.
Right.
And not flavored water and not water with artificial sweeteners, just plain water. So increasing water intake, you know, encouraging naps. Get your kids, you know, if they're old enough to watch a movie, just get them, you know, their mm-hmm. favorite blanket and a stuffed animal. And, you know, I really recommend, you know, if they're old enough to drink tea, you know, all kids, boys and girls alike, should have a little tea set and, you know, get some mm-hmm. herbal teas. You know, if they're old, over a year old, they can have a little bit of honey in it. If they're not, you can, you know, they don't typically need it sweetened. But, you know, there's, again, there's a number of botanicals that right. are actually antiviral.
Okay.
Elderberry, European black mm-hmm. elderberry is probably my favorite, especially with kids, because it's a berry. It's sweet tasting. And it's actually been shown in clinical trials too, which is unusual for herbs. There's not many, many clinical trials on several herbs, but elderberry is one that there is. And it has been shown to decrease the severity and the intensity and duration of flu and flu-like symptoms. So we know it works with the really tough to beat viruses. Right. So with some of the more common benign, like rhinovirus mm-hmm. and things like that, we do have things at our disposal for children. So finding, you know, a quality elderberry syrup, and I know, you know, Gaia Herbs has one, and mm-hmm. it's very, very potent. So what I recommend is actually putting it in maybe about 2 ounces of water and then letting them drink it, kind of, and it's sweet tasting. So it's a right. little bit like a juice would be. Mm-hmm. They also have an elderberry nighttime syrup, which has herbs like we talked about lemon balm, which is calming and antiviral, mm-hmm. And it has some poppy in it. So that's a great one to take at night, because that's probably the time that kids have the worst problem is right. in the middle of the night. They wake up screaming. Fevers often spike during the middle of the night. So it's great to have something to help with the virus and help with them sleep
right.
at night.
So I think, you know, a lot of the stuff with natural therapies is helping the children to be more comfortable, supporting their immune system, right? And letting their bodies get through the infection on its own.
Yep.
And, you know, I have found in my experience that parents who have children with chronic ear infections, if they bring them into me, oftentimes if you can get them through one of those ear infections on their own by using these supportive things to help make them more comfortable and support their immune system, it can oftentimes break the cycle of the recurrent ear infections.
Right. And there's a couple of homeopathics that are common mm-hmm. ear remedies, belladonna, pulsatilla.
Right. So homeopathics, these are the little pet pellets you can pick up at most health food stores. We have them at the Village Green. They're so great for kids because they can be dissolved in water and given very small amounts. And for kids who are old enough that there's no choking hazard, it's almost like sucking on a little candy because the medicine is dissolved on a sweet tasting little lactose pellet. So kids, there's the compliance of getting kids to take them is so incredibly high, and they can be a wonderful tool to help with moderating fevers, right, to reducing pain. So mention some of the homeopathics that you just did.
Yeah, so belladonna and mm-hmm. pulsatilla are big ones, and things like Drosera and Rumex are ones that are great for coughs,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, typically the health food stores will have the more common cold and flu remedies.
Mm-hmm.
Acylicosinum is one that, you know, at the first onset of
flu-like right.
symptoms,
mm-hmm.
you can take right away. So that's a good one to have in your first aid chest at home.
Mm-hmm. What kind of behavior might you see in a child who pulsatilla would be a good remedy? Because homeopathy is prescribed so much on the characteristics
on the
that
temperament.
You're seeing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So typically the whiny, cranky, clingy, pulsatilla, the other name of it is windflower. So I like to say, you know, if they're this sweet, loving child one second and then the next minute they're just this hysterical and a fit child, and then the next minute they're sweet and loving. So they go back and forth and you just don't know which child it's going to be at any moment. That's a classic pulsatilla. And green goo. So if they're just
right.
discharging lots
mm-hmm.
of green goo from their nose and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty classic pulsatilla child.
And what's a good one for just fevers in general?
Well, belladonna.
Yeah.
But, you know, belladonna is really when that fever, when they're just, their head is red. So
right.
if you look at a child and you're like, oh my gosh, they must be burning up with fever and their ears are red, and
mm-hmm.
That's a pretty classic belladonna.
Right.
And
so
it can work amazingly. I've used it with my own children where
mm-hmm.
it's really brought down their fever quite rapidly.
Mm-hmm. So these are some great, great strategies. So unfortunately, we are just about out of time for today's show. Carrie, thank you so much for being here. Is there any way that people can contact you if they would like to?
I do have my own website. It's www.makainaturopathic.com. It's M-A-K-A-I. And then also through Gaia Herbs, G-A-I-A. I'm on that website as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, thanks for being here. So it was a great show today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, this has been Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1260. Don't forget to tune in next week from 10 to 11 a.m. with my co-host Dana Lake. And I will be back the following week. So I'm wishing you all the best of health, and I will talk to you in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening.